See, we tend to say we need to be New Testament Christians. What do we mean by that? Corinthian? I'd hope not. So what do we mean? Which church? What church? When the early church was just like we are, with some apparent advantages, but it was progressing and certainly not perfect. And that's the way our churches are to be today. So let's have a look at this slice of reality. You see also here some of Satan's tactics. He had two primary tactics with regard to the early church. One was destruction from the outside. The other was dissension and division on the inside. And here is a case of having to deal with dissension and division on the inside. They'd already been faced with destruction from the outside in chapter 3 and again in chapter 5, right after the Ananias and Sapphira. Twice persecutions have already rolled against the church. Destruction from the outside, and the Ananias and Sapphira episode is a case of potential division or dissension from the inside. Pretense on the one hand through Ananias and Sapphira, persecution on the other hand from the religious leaders of Israel. So we see Satan's tactics really bulging here. Now look at verse 1. Let's see the problem they faced. It says, in those days, remember we're still in Jerusalem, the first little prong of the Acts 1:8 commission is in the process of being fulfilled. And that'll give you an idea why the problem arose. It was in Jerusalem. And in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplied. So they had an evangelism explosion in the church. And the rows of the church were swelling. I love that word, multiplied. At this point, it stopped adding primarily and has moved to multiplication. Earlier, the Lord added to the church those that were being saved. And there were added unto them 3,000 souls and added unto them 5,000. And suddenly, the mathematical standard accelerates upward from addition to multiplication. And that's the given standard from that point on, with one or two exceptions where you go out to a frontier and you have to start with addition because you don't have anything to multiply. So they move back to addition one or two cases later than this. But generally, the church went on multiplying, and that's what it's supposed to do today. So when you get to chapter 9, it's not just disciples multiplying as it is here. It's churches multiplying in chapter 9. They're just mushrooming, springing out, and new congregations forming in population centers everywhere over the Roman world in unbelievably short order, considering the travel standards of those days and the communication standards and things like that. So it says, in those days when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there arose a murmuring. I put those two M's together, an M and M idea. When you have a multiplication of people, you're going to have a multiplication of problems. Anytime you have people, you're going to have problems. And when you have more people, you're going to have more problems. And instead of complaining, we ought to acknowledge that's part of the territory. That's the way it is. And you can just expect it. You're unrealistic if you don't. I mean, I know I'm a problem myself. And when you get a bunch of people like me together, you've got a bunch of problems together. And the closer they rub up against each other, the more problems are going to develop through the friction that shows by their rubbing against each other. So when you get people together, you've got problems together. And the more people, the more problems. And as the people multiply, the problems will multiply. And the problem here took the form of murmuring or complaining. Now, flip that around. We automatically think complaint involves contrariness. But it doesn't necessarily involve contrariness. There are valid complaints. But if they're not resolved, it doesn't make any difference whether they involve contrariness or not. They'll prove fatal in either case. Whether they're valid or invalid, they'll prove fatal in either case if they're not resolved. So there arose a murmuring, a complaining, I get this, of the Grecians against the Hebrews. Now let me take a moment and explain that. Perhaps you know, perhaps you don't. So I'll just not assume that you do and explain it. The Grecians were Jews born outside of Palestine or outside of Israel. And they had become Hellenized or Grecianized in culture. And they normally spoke Greek language only. They didn't speak the native Aramaic of interior Palestine. They spoke the language of the people they were enculturated with. And so when they, in the feast seasons, and we're right at the tail end of feast seasons here, when they come back to Jerusalem, they come back with that language, and immediately there's a gap created by the from the Jews living, between the Jews living inside of Israel and the Jews that come visiting. You've got a massive influx of visitors here, an immigrant invasion of visitors here because of the feast season, and some of them may have stayed. They have come to the church, whether they're actually what we would call joined members or not. They're members of the body of Christ, and thus they're regarded as members of that body there in Jerusalem. And so problems developed. I heard a church in Oklahoma, a pastor told me this, and he told it for the truth, but he said he didn't really know whether it's true or not. Said it sounds too facetious to be true. At a church in Oklahoma that a company, an oil company, drilled for oil on their property and struck oil. And in a very short time, the church had a lot of extra money on its hands, had to deal with. And months later in a business meeting, one of the men in the church got up and said, "I move we divide all that new money among the members." And a man jumped up and said, "And I move we don't have any more members." The problems inside the church. So the multiplying and the murmuring go together, and especially in a case like this. Now, here's what this says. There arose a murmuring of the Grecians, the Greek-speaking Jews, the new kid on the block in this case, the visitor in the church, the influx of new members, those, and pastors know about that, how some people react to an influx of new members. I know one church that actually told the pastor to stop asking people to come because the old guard was losing control of the church. You've heard of that. It's a threat to the people who've been there all the time because they think they're going to lose their hands laid on everything in the church as if it were their body instead of Christ's body. See? So the Greek-speaking Jews from outside of Israel had come in, and the native-born Hebrews or Aramaic-speaking Jews, they were, of course, the majority, so you would expect the complaint would come from the minority group, and it does. It comes from the Grecians or the Hellenized Jews because their widows, so the people who were really desperate in their needs, were neglected. Now, mark this down. Churches fail far more because of what they do not do than because of what they do. They fail far more. In fact, the primary work of the deacon here was to give attention to what they were not doing. I wish we would learn that. I wish we would learn that. We need somebody inside the church reading the contract regularly and looking out to determine what we are not doing. Because churches fail far more before God on the basis of what they do not do than on the basis of what they do. And they spend most of their time putting out little brush fires inside of what they are, and it never occurs to them they're failing most massively for what they're not even doing at all. And even the things the church does, it fails most because of what it doesn't do. Their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. Now, that daily ministration was a distribution of money to especially poor and needy saints, those from the outside and those from the inside under persecution. It was a distribution of money that was to take care of their needs. So get this, the church was at that early date squarely facing and fulfilling its social obligations. We've made a terribly artificial distinction. We call it a social gospel. That's not fair. That's too disparaging a term. We have social obligations big time because we're Christians. See? And if we shut that off, if we shut it off onto a side course by saying that's a social gospel, we have betrayed the dimensions of the New Testament. That's not fair. See, we've tended to compartmentalize things into secular and spiritual and say the secular involves the social, and so it couldn't be spiritual. That's not so. See, they were daily feeding the poor and helpless in the early church. But some were saying, we're being shortchanged.